Welcome to Project Chatter, the podcast where PPM experts from various sectors talk about the latest trends. Listen to Val and Dale as they talk about tried and tested best practices and share their unfiltered thoughts about the industry. Whether you're here to learn how to progress your career, improve your project control skills, or just want to hear an Aussie and South African rant about projects, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Project Chatter podcast with your hosts, Dale Fung and Val Matthews.
This podcast is brought to you by Innate. We hear it from our podcast guests frequently. Today's capital projects require the highest degree of visibility. That's why we at the Project Chatter podcast want to tell you about construction project management software from Innate.
It's software that integrates every aspect of your project and puts you in control. Innate's cloud-based solutions provide a connected data flow that improves efficiency and guides better outcomes across the entire project lifecycle.
See what Innate software can do for your next construction project. Learn more at innate.com. That's INEIGHT.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Plan Academy. Plan Academy is the world's leading learning site for anyone working in construction project management or project controls.
At Plan Academy, you learn construction planning and scheduling theory, how to master scheduling software like Primavera P6, and even advanced construction scheduling techniques.
Plan Academy's courses are 100% online and at your own pace. You can learn at the office, at site, from home, anywhere. Get $75 off any Plan Academy course by visiting planacademy.com/chatter. That's planacademy.com/chatter.
Hey everyone, this episode is brought to you by justdo.com. Justdo is a great business and project management tool we've been using here at Project Chatter.
I agree, Val. I like to keep things simple and Justdo is perfect for that. But I do know it's got a lot of powerful functionality as well. And one of my favorites is the task-specific chat.
Absolutely. And for all you slackers, don't wait for Monday. Check out justdo.com. Now on with the pod.
Hello, project people. You're listening to the Project Chatter podcast, your trusted source of project experts. I'm your host, Val Matthews. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Dale Fung.
Hello, Val. Hello, listeners. It's great. Another week, another fantastic podcast. I'm like a kid in a candy shop because this one's going to get really geeky. I'm not going to spoil anything, but I'm really, really excited, Val.
I agree. When we have creators of such, it is a lot more exciting and we can ask a lot more questions and I'm looking forward to it all. Before we get into it though, just a reminder to our listeners to hit that subscribe button on whichever platform you listen to your good podcasts on and our YouTube channel for our podcast and also our guest bonus Q&A. And if you'd like to sponsor the podcast, check out projectchatterpodcast.com. Get in touch with us there. We love sponsors and they love us. So let us know. In this pod, though, we are joined by Mr. Walt Lipke, the creator of Earn Schedule, to talk about Earn Schedule. How are you, Walt?
Doing fine. Thank you, Val.
Good to see you, mate. Before we get into the detail of Earn Schedule, here is Dale with your lovely bio.
It is a lovely bio indeed. It's amazing. So listen to this, folks. Walt Lipke retired from federal service with over 35 years of experience in the development, maintenance, and management of software for automated testing of avionics. As a manager, a career highlight was his organization's winning of the Software Engineering Institute/Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers Award for software process achievement. Walt is a graduate of the USA DoD course for program managers. He is a professional engineer with a master's degree in physics and is a member of the Physics Honor Society, Sigma Pi Sigma. Walt achieved distinguished academic honors with the selection to Phi Kappa Phi. Walt is the creator of Earn Schedule, ES, and has published over 90 articles on the method, as well as the Earn Schedule book. And we'll talk about that book as well, Walt, and where people can get it. Additionally, he has presented research on ES and its schedule performance analysis methods at several conferences in the United States and internationally. For his contribution to project control, the practice of EVM, and the creation of ES, Walt has received several awards. Wait for this list. 2007 Project Management Institute Metrics Specific Interest Group Scholar Award. 2007, Project Management Institute Eric Jennett Award for Project Management Excellence. 2013, Earned Value Management Europe Award. 2014, College of Performance Management, I hope I get this right, DRIESNAC Distinguished Service Award. In 2017, the Australian Project Governance and Control Symposium honored Walt by establishing the annual Walt Lipke Project Governance and Control Excellence Award. The award is made for excellence in research, expanding knowledge of the management and governance of projects, programs, and portfolios in Australasia. Wow, Walt, we are truly humbled to have you on this podcast. That is amazing. And wow, I'm sure you're immensely proud of that.
I am proud of it, but you know, as you get older, it seems like to me that you're humbled a little bit, maybe a lot, by people honoring you. But you know, it's not really me in a lot of respects. I stand on the shoulders of a lot of people. Particularly the SEI IEEE Award. I was the manager of the organization that won that award, but we had a leader that effected a lot of the improvements. And I contributed by supporting that person, but at the same time, there were a lot of people that bought in the organization to make it happen. And that's the way it is with a lot of awards. You basically stand in front of a lot of people that provided you the impetus and the foundation to get there. So, yeah, I feel very lucky.
Wow. Well, we feel extremely lucky to have you on this podcast. So thank you so much for joining us and giving up your time. So you're joining us from across the pond today, the United States. Whereabouts are you based?
I live in Norman, Oklahoma, which is a university town. The University of Oklahoma is located here.
Nice. So again, we've got multiple time zones, and it's great to be able to speak to people across the pond. We love it. But I guess before we jump into Earn Schedule, Walt, we've heard a little snapshot there of your career, and we're chatting before we hit record, and you know, we said, let's save it. Let's save all the juicy bits for the podcast. I wonder if you wouldn't mind sort of just giving us a brief snapshot of your career, how it started out for you and the progression, and perhaps how Earn Schedule played and played a part in your career and where it started for you.
What I mentioned to you is I graduated with a master's degree in physics from Oklahoma State University. And at that time, there wasn't many jobs available. And I happened to have some friends that were at Tinker Air Force Base, and they got me into Tinker. And as luck would have it, I fell into a very small project group. There was only four of us at the time that were beginning automation of the maintenance processes at Tinker Air Force Base. And that's what I did my entire career. I began by writing test programs for avionics, and that was where I had the most knowledge and the most experience. But there were a lot of other automation areas that came into that function. I was on one special project in that time in the late, well, let's see, it started in the mid 70s and went through about 1980. And it was to automate the repair processes for jet engines. And what we did was, we built some small computers, and at the time, integrated circuits weren't all that available. Intel was just beginning. There weren't light emitting diodes and displays that were prevalent, and dot matrix printers weren't available either. And we were implementing a lot of things that were basically leading edge technology. We built these small computers using, and we probably propped up Intel, seriously, because we bought just about everything they had. Wang was beginning to produce dot matrix printers that were pretty small, which is what we needed. And I actually called Mr. Wang, and he had a supply of 50 computers, or 50 printers. We bought all of them. Surge suppressors were very new at the time. We were tying these computers that we were building to motors, because we were moving jet engine parts around a major facility and providing information back to a computer as to where these parts were in the repair process. So that was, communication was new at the time. We were operating with modems that had 300 baud rate. So that tells you how ancient it was, but it was a really interesting project, and I learned a lot on it. But primarily what I did was a designer and a worker and software producer for about a decade. And then in the early 80s, I got promoted into management. And from about 1982 or three until I retired in 2005, I was in the management field. So anyway, that was basically my career, was automation of maintenance processes.
Wow, amazing. And just bring us on to Earn Schedule, whereabouts in your career did you sort of come up with, well, we need something to, I guess, is it complement Earn Value? Is that the right way to put it? How did you sort of stumble across that? Or maybe you didn't, maybe you were searching for it.
Well, from that project, that special project I just talked to you about, in 1979, I had worked for a colonel that became the director of maintenance at Tinker, and that special project was under him. And it was, at the time, he thought I was material for greater things. And so he placed me in a school that was at Fort Belvoir, right outside of Washington, D.C. And it was a fairly elite school. And it was a program management school, and it was for major defense projects. And the people in that school were pretty elite people. I mean, they were majors and captains in the various services that were already targeted to be general officers. So that tells you kind of who these people are. Well, I was lucky enough to go to that school. Well, part of the school education was on a very new management control method called cost schedule control systems criteria. And it was the beginnings of EVM. When I went to the school, this is kind of humorous in a way. On the side of the major auditorium where the entire class would meet at times, somebody had spray painted cost schedule CSCSC across the side of the auditorium. And of course, I didn't know what it was until we actually had the class. But so that was my first introduction to cost schedule control systems. But in the early 80s, we had a project that was a major failure. And I really thought that it was so horribly, poorly done that we might have the organization just eradicated from the base. We might lose our jobs. But in 1985, with the acquisition of the B-1 bomber, that was a government acquisition. It was done with government integration. So it wasn't a defense program where the contractor's the integrator. the government was the integrator, and that provided us a way to do a portion of the work. We got we had a small portion of the test program set development for the avionics on the B-1. And I knew at the time that that was going to be our escape. If we could actually perform on that project, we would solidify the organization and be able to move forward in our future. Well, one of the things that I'd learned from the class that I went to was EVM. So I thought, okay, we need to have a better control system. Let's try EVM on a software project. And B-1 turned out to be a success. In fact, it was such a success that there were portions of the eye level automated test equipment, automated test programs that were all done by Boeing, and they weren't done well. So we ended up with the job of redoing that, plus the depot test programs that we were initially contracted for. So we ended up getting a good reputation out of that. And so that's what our beginnings were. And that's why we applied EVM. But then later, we thought we were pretty good, but I accidentally went to an SEI, a Software Engineering Institute, conference. And at that conference, they were at the beginnings of having a questionnaire to determine how good your software processes are. Well, you know, I was filled with all kinds of good feelings about how good we were in our first B-1 project. So I thought, okay, we'll take this questionnaire and we'll blow them off right here. We'll blow the top off of it. And I took it and we didn't show very well, and it shocked me. So that made me kind of an SEI process enhancement believer. And I went back to Tinker, and we began on a path of trying to improve our software processes. And so that's how we began. And from that, I began to wonder about we had progressed through some of the levels of improvement. We had achieved level 2 in 1993. So I'd gone to the software process conference in 89, and by 93 we had achieved level 2. So that tells you it's pretty difficult. And then from there, we gained some notoriety for even that small achievement of achieving level 2. But in 96, I believe it was, we did another assessment, and we had progressed. We had jumped from level 2 to level 4, which made us basically the leaders of industry. I mean, the leaders in the United States. We were feeling pretty good about ourselves at that time. So I began to experiment a little bit, and when I went to the SEI thinking we were pretty doggone good at level 4, which was, you know, right next to the top. Only at that time, only IBM was level 5, which was the top of the SEI rating. I thought we were pretty good, but I was looking for us to achieve better. And I started looking at trying to see what would happen, what our problems were with response to schedule. And earned value, applying earned value management had got us to that level four, but it didn't really address schedule management very well. And I started looking at it and trying to do something better. And I got into statistical process control. And I thought, okay, well, maybe I can do it and achieve something with the getting us to level five in the SEI achievement rating, their rating. And it turned out that, you know, earned value management just doesn't look very well at schedule. It's got kind of strange indicators that relate back to cost. And you wonder what you're doing after a while with it. So anyway, I was looking for a way to address that. And I started looking at all kinds of different things. And for some reason, I brainstormed one day and I looked at a way of looking at earned schedule from a time-based point of view. And that evolved into earned schedule. So basically, you could use the same data that you have for earned value management and extract schedule performance information out of it. And it turns out, as earned schedule has evolved, that you can actually do more with the earned value data in managing schedule than you can managing cost, which was what the earned value was initially designed for. There are so many things you can do with earned schedule for managing schedule. I mean, there is a ton of things that you can do. But anyway, that's where earned schedule came from, was basically a need for achieving level five of the SEI maturity model. So that's where it basically came from. I was looking for a way to get us to level five, and that's where it was. It came out of earned schedule.
That's an amazing carrot to have, right? If you need something to motivate you, then why not? And you know, we're so thankful that you had that target. And it sounds like an amazing story, you know, where you've already achieved so much in such a high level, and you're like, well, I want more. And that's fascinating within itself, just to see that drive to go, that was not enough. But Val, please, I want to bring you in. I'm sure you've got loads of questions you want to throw at Walt.
Yeah, I mean, I think for those that are, you know, new to earned value, that definitely as a basis, as a foundational level, earned value management has its limits. It's useful to a degree. And I think, like you said, Walt, you know, it gets you to a place, but it's not a place in time, is it? So when you see a schedule variance, and this is always, you know, in the project control space where Dale and I work, and you try and explain schedule variance with dollars, you've lost your audience. You're talking to engineers, you're talking to technical folk, and they don't seem to relate. It just seems like management talk, and that doesn't help anything. So I like the fact this is more specific around and relevant back to the real metric that matters on projects, which is time. And so we've kind of explained, I guess, how you got to earn schedule. I would love to know from your perspective, what's your simplified definition of earned schedule for those listening? And if you had an example of how you would use that on a project, that'd be really useful.
Basically, it's pretty simple. You have with earned value three different curves. You have the plan value curve, and you have the earned value data, which plots to a curve as well. And you have the actual costs. earned schedule is basically a projection of earned value back on the planned value curve. Okay. So then you basically use a vertical line from the intersection of the projection of earned value to planned value, and using where that intersection is on the time axis gives you how much of your planned value, your planned portion of the project that you've actually accomplished. So that's it in a nutshell, but there's so much that you can derive out of it. It's amazing what you can get from it.
Whilst it wasn't public on our projects that I've been on, I would use earned schedule. I don't know where I picked it up, Walt. I picked it up somewhere. And
Do you happen to know Alex Davis?
No, Alex, but Davis, I was working on
there in England, and he is probably the expert there that resides in England.
Alex Davis, shout out to Alex Davis if you're listening. Well, it's an interesting thing, because I would use that obviously to look at slippage, because no one could give me a time unit in terms of how they were going to deliver. Even with schedule variances and variance analysis reports, which you get out of your earned value pack, your cost performance reporting, no one was actually talking about time. They would refer all their narrative and commentary to cost. And I think earned schedule is far more important, especially these days where we have, you know, bigger projects, far more risk than, let's say, we used to, or perhaps far more complexity than we used to. And time is actually what's driving cost, which it always has to a degree. But if you can control time, and Dale and I think come from the same cloth when it comes to this philosophy, if you can control time, then you can control cost to a degree, and you have far more insight over to the program's health. So if things are slipping to the right, you know, that slippage could be explained by earned schedule. Is that right? And from your perspective, I think just one more from me, you said there's a whole bunch of other things you can do with earned schedule. What are this one of the things you can use earned schedule for other than slippage and, you know, time cost overrun? Are you looking at new ways of evolving it, or have you seen it evolve?
Well, yes. You know, my mind is kind of going, whirlwind right now, but yes, there are quite a few things that you can do with earned schedule. Of course, you can calculate the schedule variance, and you can calculate the SPI, and you can do forecasting with it as well. But there are some interesting things that you can do. One of the things that I call it longest path. And the way you apply earned schedule there is you look at the different paths of your project from beginning to end. And you use those paths to develop a planned value curve. Okay. And you look at the earned value in those paths and apply it just as if it's the project. So from each of those paths and all of that data, now you can do forecasts. The longest forecast is likely where you're going to end up. So that becomes the forecast for the project. And it's pretty interesting. It's definitely more work, but it's definitely going to give you more insight into how your project is actually performing. And there are, I think Robert Vandeveld, I don't know if anybody else has done this, but Robert Vandeveld with his tool, which I'm not too sure how big a project his tool will be applied. He's a Canadian, and he sells tools. And I believe his tool will do forecasts and do analysis on longest path, what I call longest path. So it will give you a much more accurate view of how your project is actually performing.
Yeah, that was probably my follow-up question. What was with such a useful, I guess, formula for measuring projects and particular forecasts, was there any software out there that was actually doing it? Now, I know I can get longest path as well from Primavera and a few other tools, but to apply earn schedule to it, are any software companies picking this up and implying the rules and the conditions in their systems?
Yes. Off the top of my head, I wish I could remember some of them. They're actually listed on my website. If you'll let me peek at my website.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah. Check them out. Phone a friend.
We'll include all the links as well, Walt, in the show notes. So.
Absolutely. Well, Dale, you know this. I mean, we've used Earn Schedule while Walt's looking up, some of these key software providers. What's your perspective on Earn Schedule in terms of practical application on complex projects?
I think there's a similar challenge that it has with earned value. You know, as soon as you, I mean, people struggle with earned value. We spoke about this on the last podcast that I think you alluded to it, Val, a little bit earlier that, you know, for us controls geeks, we get it. We're like, why doesn't anyone else understand the metrics? And that's because we don't actually make it in a form that's easily consumable, right? And so I think whenever it comes to something that's more complex than a milestone being late, perhaps, or, you know, you're spending more than your budget and it becomes a little bit more analytical, I think you lose the audience a little bit when they're disinterested. So for me, I think we have a role as a controls community to make it interesting, to make it relevant to what they're doing. And so that would be my sort of take on it, is that there's a lot of amazing methodologies out there. And you can use a number of them that will probably get you more or less in the same space. I mean, I'm an advocate of earned value. Earned schedules are a fantastic complement to that as well. But I just think that as we mature as a controls organization, we need to add this bit on to our skill set to say, it's not just something that we go into a black box and do analytics. It's actually something that's applicable and can make a big difference to the way we deliver projects successfully. So I know that might be a bit of a politician's answer, Val, but yeah, that's what I think.
No, it's your view. And it's interesting because you're 100% right. I think Walt's got the website up now. Are you ready to reveal, Walt?
Yes. Let me look at them here. There's one, it's an expensive one that Mario Van Hook, a professor in Belgium, has. He calls it OR-AS, Operations Research Applications and Solutions. It's the name of the tool is called ProTrack, and it's fairly expensive. Kim Henderson, a collaborator of mine, has a project management set of spreadsheets in Australia. And the fellow I was talking to you about earlier in Canada, his tool is called Project Flight Deck. There are several others. There's one called SuperTech, Visitrend, PIMS, Scrum Smart, Management Technologies has one as well. Encore Analytics has one, and there's another one called Project Tracker. So there's several tools out there that use Earn Schedule. Now, they're not all equivalent. Some are better than others. Like I mentioned, Project Flight Deck he calculates something I call the P factor. And what it does is, I don't know if I can exactly explain it, but it's a factor I don't know if I can actually dig into it that well. It's a tool that will give you additional information besides what normally is done with Earn Schedule.
Okay, we'll check it out.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. I was just thinking there that, so just backtracking, Walt, so we have to have earned value in place for earned schedule to be measured and work.
That's correct. It requires the earned value data to work.
Okay, so it's not a standalone. You can just do earned schedule on its own. So just so those listening can understand that it's, you know, it's all encompassing, which is great, because as we say, we often struggle. You know, when I think Val was saying, when you present a schedule variance in dollars, you know, people can't really relate. But that's quite interesting. So let's just go down a bit of a rabbit hole and throw one out from left field, perhaps. If we're looking at schedule, then can we then start using the metrics around earned schedule with things like QSRAs to perhaps give confidence in predictions as well, bringing in risks into that? Or is that something that we haven't brought in or won't quite work?
I don't know really how to answer that. Earned schedule operates off of the earned value management data. And I'm not really too sure how to answer that.
So in some of the... So let me take you through my thinking in similar ways, how we can get predicted, calculated EACs. Could we then get sort of calculated end dates in a similar fashion based on past performance and various confidence levels? Because I guess that's kind of what QSRA is trying to give you with many, many iterations, except I'm thinking earned value gives you your past performances to predict the future. Is that some of the metrics that come out of earned schedule as well?
Yes. You can do projections out of earned schedule, and just as you can with earned value. That's one of the calculation methods with earned value is the independent estimate at completion. It's just a calculation, and there's different formulas for it. And earned schedule has the same thing.
And are there various confidence levels with that?
Well, I actually do a statistical forecasting. I don't know if you've ever looked at any of the material I've produced, but one of the very first things that I did was produce a statistical forecasting method. And because of the way it operates, it converges as you move through time. And so you will get a coning effect of high and low confidence limits on the projections. And I think it's pretty good, actually. Because you have limited data, the very first projections are going to be really wide. They just are. But those, yeah. I mean, it's pretty foundational to statistical methods. I mean, that's what happens as you, the more data that you have, the more honing that you have, that you're going to get in what the final outcome will be. But it's proven to be pretty doggone good. And it's not, there's a calculator on the website that produces the outputs for independent estimate completion, you can do it at any confidence level, but you can enter whatever confidence level you want. But the way it's set up right now is 90% if you just pull it off the earned schedule website. But you can put in a different confidence level if you like. But I'm really kind of surprised that some of the tool folks that market tools haven't picked up on this statistical method and introduced it into their tool because it's pretty simple. I mean, certainly it requires some cranking, but I'm sure their tool does a lot of cranking otherwise too. It's not that difficult, but it does require some more computations.
What is the let's be a little bit provocative, Walt, what is the biggest rival to earned schedule, or what is the alternative?
What is it? There's a where is this fellow? I think it's a fellow that may be in Greece. I can't remember now. And I can't remember what it's called, but he has a calculation method that produces kind of similar output. But what I've seen with it, it's pretty limited. Aaron's schedule will produce a lot more information than his method will. And gosh, I can't remember. Seemed like his name is Gorbani. I'm sorry, I can't recall. But truly, at this point in time, there's not a method that will do all of the things that Earn Schedule can do at this point in time. There may be something that comes along later, but Earn Schedule can do. If you've looked at the Earn Schedule website and looked at all of the calculation methods that are there, there are people that pick those up and incorporate them into current tools that are out there. You know, I provide them for free. People can use them however they wish. But I think Earn Schedule is kind of ahead of the game right now.
Wow, that's amazing. And if I may just jump into story time, do you have real life examples where you've kind of come in on a project and then it's been running with Earn Value, applied Earn Schedule, and it's improved delivery?
I've been out of the business for quite a while, so I don't know that I have data that would tell you that. There might be a fellow in the UK that maybe can, well, Alex Davis might be able to respond to that. The fellow that is kind of the Earn Schedule focal point there. There's a fellow in London that is a project. He works in various projects. Let me look on my. Let's see here. See if I can find his name in my email. He's got a long name, and it's an Iranian name. His name is Mojtaba Karai Kesha. And he has worked in various projects there in London, some of the major projects. And he is a fellow that's probably a good source for application of Earn Schedule and doing projections and management with Earn Schedule on various projects there in the UK. Some of them had been, I think there was a major railway project, and I think he was on that project.
Okay. So. Okay. But I guess the fact is that, you know, it has been applied on real life projects and it does work is what you're saying. And just for the listeners out there, it's not just a theory that's been around for a while. And you know, you're not just trying to sort of say it's great and works in theory, but actually in practice, it has contributed to successful delivery. And I think that's the point that you're trying to make as well, which is fantastic. If I just may then as well, bring into perhaps the more people side and behaviors and you know how people buy into now using this, because we kind of said, when you know Val was asking me what do I think is the biggest struggle, is getting people to use Earn Value is a struggle because they may not fully appreciate and understand it. I'm guessing then by the same token, Earn Schedule suffers from the same symptom, or can it actually be an aid to allow people to adopt Earn Value and Earn Schedule because you have this additional dynamic?
I would hope so. I don't know the answer to that, but I think there's a lot of people that are reluctant to apply Earn Value Management. And I'm not exactly certain why, Earn Schedule may be something that is more appealing to people that want to know more about the time domain of how their project is performing. And so that may make Earn Value Management more attractive simply because Earn Schedule is an add-on to Earn Value Management. But you don't need the actual cost to apply Earn Schedule. You need the planned value and the earned value to apply Earn Schedule.
Yeah,
Yeah. But of course, the actual costs are important to the project.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if business wants to make money, then costs are important. But, and maybe you've got a point there, you know, if people aren't aware of Earn Schedule, and maybe they are after listening to this podcast, and the demand is there, perhaps these, you know, mainstream companies that have these earned value products will start looking at integrating it on. But Val, I know you've been listening there with interest in the background. Any comments?
Well, you know, we talk about technology a lot. And I think just before we press record today, we were talking about the fact that technology is moving at such a pace that, you know, these big complex projects are going to be, it's going to be hard for them to keep up. But the premise and the foundations of the calculations that we use won't change. So effectively, these statistical forecasts and models and these uses of terminology can be programmed into algorithms that we could use in machine learning, let's say. And I put a few of our guests on the spot last week, Dale?
I think so, well, yeah.
And I was talking to a software provider and I was talking about the use of a non-proprietary system where, you know, a bit like a melting pot, Walt, you know, in the project space where it was just one tool that was taught all the rules. And if you think, if you gamify projects, in theory, there's a whole bunch of controlling and monitoring rules. You know, you mentioned CS squared back in the day and how that's progressed and evolved. And now we have earned value and now we have earned schedule and we have other project delivery methodologies like agile and scale and safe and all that. What's stopping a machine, from my perspective, what's stopping a machine ingesting this information and applying that by demand? Would that be something of use, or do you see that coming in the future?
I would think that anything that's data oriented can be learning can be applied to it, and better projections can come out of it. It just seems logical to me that that would be something that could be done. I think earned schedule and earned value are things that could, learning could come, there could be learning applied to those, to the data that is inherent in earned schedule. And some of the things that I've come up with would probably be better used in a learning environment, like the longest path that we just discussed. I think that because there you're trying to do decision making on which path is telling you the answer that is most probable. So what the outcome can be for the project. So I think that's in the future, or maybe even now. Really, I mean, there's enough knowledge now to apply it.
Yeah, that's right. I think some of the project community are split on exactly what machine learning or AI's role is on projects. But I actually think it's taking, like you said, standing on the shoulders of giants in a way that you take people like your conception here, Walt, which has proven benefits to projects, and then apply that into a machine to help us, integrate, I guess, all of the learnings, not just earn value, but all the methodologies that are available. I think one of the challenges is a lot of them are stuck behind, they're either stuck behind institutions and paywalls where you need a certification in order to get access to them, or the information is within an industry or a sector or a company and it's proprietary, or it's within a software and therefore it is proprietary and, you know, it's the IP of the software company. One of the challenges, I think, is around education. And maybe this is why this isn't so broad. I mean, unless you're a real geek like us, Walt, you probably don't get access to this type of information. You definitely don't get access to Walter and Steve Wake and all these other guys who have been around since its inception. But how do we broaden the platform? Because I know for a fact, when I did my project management studies, the Earn Schedule wasn't mentioned, which it should have been in the curriculum. How do we get institutional bodies of knowledge to adopt this as part of their curriculum?
Really a great question. I'm not too sure I have a good answer for that because I'm not really integrated into those areas. But I think one of the outcomes of what has occurred with Earned Schedule and being adopted into Project Management Institute guides and standards, and the ISO standard that has now taken up Earned Schedule into its standard. And I think those things will help propagate it, because people go to schools to learn what's in those standards. And so I think tools manufacturers are pushed a bit by things that become standardized. So once, but it all takes time. I mean, Earned Schedule came for me because of a need that I had in 2002. So that tells you, you know, Earned Schedule is still new to people here. Here we are in 2020. So, you know, we can't escape the time component of new things. I mean, for 20 years, for me, it's not a new thing, but for a lot of people, it is.
Yeah.
It just simply because it's not normal. Until it becomes really normalized in earned value management teaching and earned value management application, until that time, it's still going to be new.
Yeah,
it's not new, really.
No, we had this joke with the 4D construction guys. We're talking about BIM and how long BIM has been around for, and it's certainly not as old, but they still, even after 10 years of demonstrating the value of having, visual building information, they still consider it, new to some sectors and industries, and certainly to people who are studying that craft, that it's quite new in project spaces to talk about BIM. And, there is a gestation period, but you would hope in 2021, we're starting to get this stuff in. If it's in ISO standards, that's fantastic. And maybe we can talk a little bit about your book, Walt, because you explain, obviously, this Earned Schedule in detail. Two books. Did you want to give us a bit of an update on each one of them and what they're about?
Well, Earned Schedule was the initial book, and it integrated some things that were in Earned Value Management with a lot of Earned Schedule. And the second book, the first book was produced in 2009. In the second book, there's been a lot of kind of application advances that are in the second book. The second book was published in actually on election day, presidential election day in November, this last November. And it's basically just more advancement in what Earned Schedule can do. I don't know if you want me to, I can pull down the book and go through the contents, but I don't know.
No. I think more from your perspective, what would you say the key highlights are or interests from anyone wishing to read into this topic?
Well, Earned Schedule, the first book, gets into the basics of Earned Schedule. And then it talks about the forecasting applications that are in there. And let me think here. I'm not too sure. Let me pull it down. I get confused about what all's in these books. They're by books. It's kind of crazy that, maybe it's 78 years old. I can be excused for not having a good memory.
Absolutely. Help yourself to whatever you need.
Yeah, the first book is certainly more basic. I mean, it's going to go through what you have to do to make the Earned Schedule calculation. And then it talks about what the effects of a project rebaseline would be. I mean, you'd need to know that if you're going to apply Earned Schedule and you're going to be in an actual project, what happens when you rebaseline. And then we get into one of the calculations that you can make with Earned Schedule is what's called the two complete performance index. And that is a a calculation that's made in earned value management. And it basically tells you what performance do I have to complete at a particular point in time. And then I go into one of the chapters is performance management with earned schedule. So in that particular chapter, we talk about you have a project that's on the fringe of not performing, where you're going to finish either at cost or on time. So it gives you some methodology on how to transform your performance to a performance level that will make whatever your contract requirements are. So it tells you basically what that how to go about making that transformation. Not managerial wise, but computational wise, it's going to give you a goal to hit. And then we get into an area that I call schedule adherence. And that gives you some more information about how you're performing against what your original plan was, and with more detail. And it evolves into something I call effective earned value. So there is, if you're doing stuff out of sequence, if you're doing things out of sequence, that has a cost to it. I mean, we see that with defense contractors, which I'm more familiar with. They'll do things out of sequence to portray to whoever their government oversight authority is that they're staying on schedule, which they aren't really. They're giving you earned value data that's telling them that you're doing better than you really are, because you're not doing work in accordance with the sequence of the schedule. And then I get into some application of statistics, which we talked about a little earlier. The second book carries on, and let's see. Get into an area of testing earned schedule forecasting reliability. I get into one chapter is on assessing the EVM and earned schedule forecasting. One of the chapters is on deterministic forecasting method selection, because there's different methods you can use to forecast with. And each one of them will give you some different answer. So what do you do to determine which one do you want to use and why? One of the areas that came up in, gosh, I can't remember exactly. There's been so many things that have occurred. I received an email, and a fellow was talking about looking at a portion of his earned value data. And he had a particular reason for it, because he was wanting to assess what was happening. He was only looking at, his responsibility was only a portion of the project. So what he wanted to look at was, how well are the milestones in my portion of the project doing? So one of the chapters is on doing that thing, looking at a portion of the earned value data to project whether or not whatever you're managing, whatever milestone you're managing to, whether or not you're going to hit that. And then there's a chapter on forecasting with project interruption. What happens if your project gets interrupted and is dead for a time? What happens? And then it starts back up. And
that would be, So I was just going to say that'd be really relevant to COVID. A lot of projects had to be put on hold. And how do they start back up?
And one of the chapters, which we touched on a little bit earlier, is called Longest Path Duration Forecasting. And in that, you know, you you can do forecast for critical path. You can forecast for any path in the project. And what I mentioned earlier is if you plot a path through your project, all the different sequential paths that can end up at the end, you can do forecasts for each one of those if you'd like. And that gives you pretty good information. The longest one of those paths is where you're likely going to end up. So that gives you a better forecast of what your project is going to, you know, how your project is going to progress. And that changes through the project. Well, this longest path duration forecasting method will accommodate those changes. So it will tell, it will give you a more, a better look at where your project is actually, how it's actually performing and where you're likely, more likely to end up.
So how does that relate to, just a question on that, Walt, how does that relate back to the critical path? If you're measuring,
well, you can measuring... do critical path. You can certainly, critical path can be one of those paths, but it turns out that you may actually have a longer path in execution than the critical path.
Well,
that's interesting.
That's pretty powerful.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Because
obviously, you know, project management method, you know, 101 is you follow the critical path. And that'll determine, you know, those that are have the biggest risk or impact to the end date. There's a direct line to that end milestone.
Earned schedule can you can do a lot of things with it. You can apply it to all of your total earned value management data and get a time completion forecast from that data, or you can apply earned schedule to just the components that make up the critical path and do a projection from that too. So there's all kinds of application methods that you can do with earned schedule.
No, it's a really interesting space, because it's not all the time we get to have creators of technical instruments and tools that we would use on projects that would have some applicable and useful purpose, such as earned schedule. I mean, it would be really useful to apply this to some of the projects that are out there today, Dale. You know, the Crossrails we had last week, we were talking about Crossrail. Are they using earned schedule? Who knows? But maybe they should. And anyway, you know, and anyone who's listening to this who is on a big project, and like you said, Walt, that was a really good point around if you could do it around a portion of the project, I think that's really attractive too, because sometimes, and obviously this is an extension to earned value, but sometimes earned value across the entire program is probably not necessary and might even be misrepresented, where there are obscurities or ambiguities around the work that you're doing, maybe software or something else, that makes earned value kind of not the right tool of choice. And so it might be useful to have this in portions where it makes sense, where you've got the right level of data and the right quality of integrity of data as well. Does that work for you?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think you can, I think a major, I don't know how you do it in the UK or in Australia or other locations. They may be very similar, but in the US, there are different components of major projects and they're managed separately, but they're integrated at the project level. And if you only applied earned value management at the project level, you would miss a lot of stuff. So you get earned value information from all the components that are merged together. And that's basically how this particular application to Milestone came about. The fellow was managing a portion of the project, wanting to see how he was progressing towards achieving milestones that he was responsible for. And you can certainly do that by breaking out a portion of the project and applying earned value to that portion alone. You can mask a lot of things if you roll everything up. That's one of the problems, but you can break things down and look at it more critically and more detail-wise as well.
As they say, the devil is in the detail, Walt. And, you know,
right.
Your distinguished career in two books, I mean, you know, if that doesn't sell books, then I don't know what will. So folks, go out and check out Walt's books. It's you know, it's with such a distinguished career, Walt, you can be forgiven for the boundary lines blurring as well as to, you know, when things happened and where they are. But I wanted to jump to a listener question that we got in, and it is quite a meaty one, but it's quite an interesting one. I don't know if we have the answer between all of us, but it's interesting if we can just maybe perhaps discuss it around it and maybe just agree with it rather than trying to solve it. But it comes from Warren Beardall. Warren is a he listens to every single podcast. He'll be listening to this episode as well. He's been on the podcast a few episodes ago, and we love you know, Warren's challenging questions, but it goes along the following lines. So construction projects are generally procured against incomplete information. They then change in scope, build, and priority of outcome. Hard learned lessons are generally left behind or sit hidden within the project post completion. Employers think their contractor is probably hiding something. Contractors know the employer has passed on risks that they don't understand or care about. Supply chains are then required to pick up those loose ends. Contracts become as important as prenups to failed marriages, signed with the same level of pessimism to the future partnership. Similarly, the integrity of estimated and actual cost and schedule information between these commercial interfaces reflects this low trust environment. What does the term actual, inverted commas, then become against this backdrop of gamesmanship? And what needs to change to make earn value and earn schedule support a project rather than just a single entity within it? So very, very meaty one indeed, Walt. But I wonder if you could just add your views to that. I don't know, like I say, if we can quite solve that, because there's a lot around behaviors, around trust, around collaboration. But yeah, you know, if you have some just high level thoughts around that.
I don't know if I could really answer that very well. It seems to me that if you want to apply earn value and get something out of it, you need to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it. You know, I think there are, especially in the early days and even now, people try and game or earn value. But it doesn't benefit anyone if you do that. I mean, you just basically everybody that's on the project, regardless of what role you play, whether you're the contractor, whether you're, you know, the producer, you're the recipient of the product, everybody needs to be playing for the same reasons. And, I think what happened with earned value management, especially in the beginnings, was, you know, people thought it was just an add-on for, you know, to make somebody happy. Mm. But I think over time, it's shown that it does have value. So, what it boils down to is just being honest, with yourself, basically with yourself, and who you are responsible to. I don't know if there is a.
I think, you know, the challenge comes in.
If you're gonna fudge. If you're gonna be honest, you're gonna be honest. I don't know if there really is a good answer to the fellow's question. It gets down to integrity.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I agree with that. Integrity is key. And I was just gonna add, you know, if you believe your own lies and you're honest with your own lies, then you're screwed, right?
Agree. I think Dale, that question is actually more pointed at culture than it is
the
technical requirements.
That's a really excellent point. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But you know, trust Warren to send in amazing, challenging questions, and we love them. So everyone else listening, please do send in your questions. We'll air them. But Walt, did you want to comment further?
Just in addition to that, when we initially applied earned value management to software projects, I think people thought it was a game.
Yeah.
And people tried to fudge in the beginnings. But as we got more and more into it and saw that, at least from us briefing the customer as to where we were and what our problems are, it showed that it gave us benefit in doing those presentations. And so as people saw that it actually gave benefit in those customer relationships, they took it more to heart as to actually applying it religiously and intentionally. So I think over time, and it didn't take that long for people to realize the benefit of it. So I don't know. And maybe not everybody's had that experience, but that was my experience.
I think there is a weak spot in earned value, and it's the most malleable curve of all of them, which is the earned value curve. When you talk about physical progress and when we talk about gaming the system, that's just generally where it happens. It's something to do with the estimate to complete, but also the rules of credit around progress and letting project managers just come up with numbers arbitrarily and not have anything grounded in some type of logic or basis of estimate or back to the scope that we're trying to measure. Walt's nodding there. I guess that you've seen this as well, Walt?
That's exactly right. One of the things that came out of one of my analytical methods is a schedule adherence index. And basically, you can make your earned value data or the earned value report look pretty good and really not have a good report. But the schedule adherence index will tell you whether or not you're actually progressing as the project was intended to progress. And if you're not progressing that way, that means that you probably have lots of workarounds, lots of rework sitting inside that you're not reporting, and you know that it's there. Well, the schedule adherence index will, if project managers apply it, they will see that the project is truly not where it's being represented.
Excellent. We love KPIs and indicators. Walt, this brings us to a special part of the podcast. It's a feature. It's called Defend the Indefensible. And for this, right, it's a bit of fun. For this, we welcome on our in-house guru, Mr. Martin Carriston. So Martin, there, and if you don't mind turning your mute button off and turning your video camera on there, if you don't mind taking Walt to a bit of a fun feature.
Oh, this is where he pulls my brain apart, right?
A little. As Dale said, it's a little bit of fun. It's where we invite our guests to defend a ridiculous statement. It's inspired by some of the ridiculous comments we've all heard over the years, and I'm sure you've heard many over your long and distinguished career. If you're willing, if you're keen, we can make a start.
Okay, well, I'll give it a try. I may look foolish in the end of it.
Okay, Walt, so you have 30 seconds to argue for the following statement. I don't need another fancy metric to tell me how to manage a schedule. If I hit my planned activities next month, then I'm managing my schedule effectively. Discuss.
I think I had a boss that once said that. he managed basically by the seat of his pants, and I'm not too sure. He actually had some success, but you can say he delivered products, but I'm not too sure he delivered products on time. The products worked, but I'm not too sure if you manage in that manner, you probably aren't going to make your customers happy. I mean, that's probably the bottom line of it.
Definitely, yeah. It's definitely a short-termist approach. So yeah, Thanks a lot.
Brilliant. Thanks, Walt. Thanks for being a good sport. And as we head into the end of the pod, Walt, I guess it's been such a privilege and honor to have you on this podcast, you know, such a, as Martin was saying, distinguished career there. And it's not, as Val said, it's not often we get to have creators of methodologies on the podcast. So it truly has been an honor for us. And thank you so much for that. But as we head into the end of the podcast, is there any final thoughts you want to leave our listeners with?
I really appreciate you fellows having me on and treating me so well. I mean, this has been really enjoyable, and I thank you all very much for that. And I hope at some point in time that we actually can have a physical meeting
where we
can be together and have some drink or, you know, talk about maybe something else besides our schedule.
Absolutely.
This has been fun, and thank you very much for giving me the time and contacting me.
No, fantastic. And a special thanks goes out to Steve Wake, you know, who gave us your name. And thanks, Steve. And I know you listen to the podcast as well and has been a guest on previous episodes. So thank you so much, Steve. Val, any final thoughts from you?
No, it was fantastic to lift the bonnet a bit, Walt, with you. And I was very intrigued as well. Obviously, I like the technical side of things, as you can tell, but I agree. I think popping a beer and maybe not talking about end schedule or end value would be useful as well. So I look forward to non-pandemic days when we can fly again. And I'd love to visit you over in the US at some point.
I agree. Possibly, maybe Steve will invite me back to one of his conferences. Share Steve's hospitality. He's if you've ever gone to one of his conferences, it's awesome. It really is awesome.
Yeah, we're in touch with Steve, and we may be involved with one or two of his conferences. So watch this space, folks. Watch this space. As we said, such a distinguished career, and I guess on behalf of all the controls professionals all over the world, we salute you and thank you for contributing to our profession. It's been an absolute privilege and honor to have you on here, as we've said. So, folks, that is all we have time for on this episode, but it doesn't have to stop here. Support our charities, access blogs, or if you think you have something interesting to share, visit projectchatterpodcast.com. Don't forget to hit subscribe on our YouTube channel and your favorite podcast player so you don't miss the next one. You can also leave us a voice message now. We're on Anchor, so please check that out. A massive, massive thank you to our guest today, Mr. Walter Lipke. And thank you all for listening. Till next time, we say stay safe, be disruptive, and have fun doing it. From me, Val, and Martin, it's bye for now. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast belong solely to the participating individuals and not necessarily to the individual's employer, organization, committee, or other group or individual. Additionally, any views or opinions are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, or individual.